Blog Talk Radio.
This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Basically, the 1% of the motorcycle community who operates outside the law.
Their total focus is on hatred for the enemy. They have the policy of shoot or kill on sight if they can.
It's bullshit. Law enforcement just tries to paint this picture to the media and just cover up their bullshit, cover up their lies, and I just like to say fuck them.
What'd that man say?
Fuck them.
Well, hello, everybody. It's 69 degrees, the sun going down with a slight breeze. It's Tuesday at 6 o'clock. What's going on over there in Illinois?
It's cold. The sun is already down. And still waiting on spring. We'll get a couple good days here and there, maybe one or two, and then it goes back to cold.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's not staying warm yet. I can't wait for it, though. Other than that, nothing else is new.
Yeah? How's your grandson doing?
He was in the hospital this morning. He was, Megan had taken him into the ER because he was around children in the home that were sick with the stomach flu, and he has it, and he vomited really bad this morning. And, you know, she wasn't sure. She wouldn't wake me up to say, is everything okay, you know, or what do you think? And she hurried up, rushed him in, and but they wanted to make sure that he was okay anyway, so. And then I just got to follow up with the doctor tomorrow.
Okay.
So other than that, you know, he would be a fine, happy baby right now if it wasn't for the tummy bug. Ugh.
Yeah. Well, Fran, you're in the chat room. And
hi, Fran.
I don't think we have to fight. So, if you want to call in, call in. But what I was going to do here was, let me fix this real quick. And then, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. We got a guy here in Oceanside who decided he's going to start writing tickets again.
Oh.
Yeah. So I came up with this it's actually sent to me, but it came off of agingrebel.com.
Okay.
And, it's called Rules of Engagement. It's one thing that I hope everyone realizes that cops can and do lie. Sometimes, despite your best efforts, the cops get involved. Maybe someone else called the cops. Maybe you felt the situation warranted their involvement. Or maybe they showed up at the scene. However, they got involved. And they're not going away just because you don't want to deal with them, so it's time to use your head. Years ago, I would have said that the first rule in dealing with the cops is to remain calm, keep your cool, and don't lose your temper. Now, that's rule number two. With the bigotry of recording devices that we all carry around in our pockets, cell phones, the first rule when dealing with the police is to record everything. And if you are in a public place, if the police have no expectation of privacy, so you can record them, except in Illinois, check your state and local laws. But in general, you're allowed to record. The police will tell you you can't record, but we all know the police will lie to you. If you can, have your record streamed to one of several online services available, that's even better. And obviously, video and audio are better than just audio. But take what you can get. The second rule in dealing with police is to stay calm. Keep your cool and don't lose your temper. No matter how right you are, losing your temper is likely to result in getting cuffed, pepper sprayed, beat, shot, arrested, or some combination of all of these. But don't yell at them, swear at them, give them the finger, or provoke them. Treat them as you would a business client you don't like. That's not to say that in order to avoid their wrath, you need to compromise everything. But if you do end up being caged, there's a better likelihood that your arrest for contempt of cop will not result in any charges sticking if you can substantiate a claim of not guilty of disorderly conduct, which is just usually... Remaining calm and being peaceful is no guarantee that you're not going to be the victim of abuse, however. You're more likely to prevail if you don't act out in anger. Third rule is never talk to the police. You should never say anything to them that is not absolutely required by law. It's never in your best interest to give them information. What's Bill's two favorite words?
Shut up.
Shut up. Rather than explain further, I would like to insist that you watch part one and two of this video. Watch the whole thing. It's worth your time. This rule would have been number one, but if you don't follow the first two rules, this one could be moot. Lose your temper with the cops, you're going to say things that could be used against you later. Furthermore, without a recording, they can falsify your statements. So, let me get to... Play that video right now as soon as it comes up. Sometimes I can load them up, sometimes I can't because of the way they're doing things.
I don't know.
Okay, here we go. This one's called Don't Talk to Police.
I was invited to give you a taste of a typical law school classroom experience here today, and I thought I would take advantage of this opportunity to do something that's been on my mind for a while, to stand up and to proudly say, God bless America, God bless the Bill of Rights, and thank God for the Fifth Amendment. I'm not ashamed to say I'm proud of the Fifth Amendment, and I'm proud to admit on camera and on the Internet that I will never talk to any police officer under any circumstance.
No.
Is that true, Stacy?
Yep.
Okay. Let this guy finish. Hey, Nora, you got a lot of noise in the background.
Oh, my God. You have no idea how far away I am from the TV, and I'm not deaf. It's just because it's a big screen TV. Okay, is that better?
All right.
Just with all due respect, sir. I'm doing something really extraordinary here today, something you'll almost never see another law professor do as long as you live. I'm really putting myself on the spot here. This was my idea. By my invitation, I have given up half of my time, approximately. I'm giving equal time and the last word to an expert who really knows something about what I'll be talking about. So I'm opening myself up to the possibility that he will contradict me. I was a criminal defense attorney when I was in private practice. So I want to make sure, in fairness to you, if I'm misleading you or giving you a slanted or one-sided presentation, you'll be able to get the last word from somebody else. I'm sure he'll have a lot to teach all of us, including myself. The Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution provides, no person shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself. And this unfortunate amendment has gotten a bad rap in recent times, much of it tragically and unnecessarily through, as you may have heard, the headlines. There was a recent Regent Law School graduate who was in all the news for a couple of weeks. She was an outstanding former student of mine, and she really got quite a lot of undeserved flack for the fact that she chose to exercise her right to remain silent when the Senate wanted to ask her certain questions that arguably might have tended to incriminate her. All of the world was aghast. The Christian community in particular looked at this and said, how could a Christian do such a thing? How could a Christian take the Fifth Amendment? And I said, you go, girlfriend. I do the same thing. I'll do it every time. And I want to talk to you about why that's true, but first a quick listening test. Let me read to you something that was taken out of the newspaper this morning, and I want you to listen to it closely. And I'm giving you a heads up. I'm warning you in advance, which is not fair to you. Not fair to me, but I'm giving you a warning that I'll be quizzing you on this in just a few minutes. This will test your aptitude for legal study and legal practice. Listen closely. It won't take long. Last night, agents of the Norfolk Police Department found three victims of an apparent murder dead in an apartment in the East Ocean View area, the apparent victims of a gangland-style slaying, and possibly the victims of gang-related violence. The police are investigating this as a possible murder and suicide, but right now suspect that the three were all killed by the same individual. No suspects have yet been identified in the slaying, But veteran police detective George Brook has confirmed that police are following up on evidence pointing to the possible involvement of an off-duty naval officer as the perpetrator. The bodies, which were found by the apartment manager at about 8 o'clock in the morning, appear to have been slain sometime earlier in the same evening, probably sometime between midnight and 2 o'clock in the morning. That's it. Those are all the facts I'll ask you to remember, and it won't be for very long either. Let's see how well you do. I'll be quizzing you in just a few minutes. Now, here's the easiest question you'll ever get from a client in all the days of your life. Question, hey, the police are here. They want to talk to me. What should I do? Well, I could give you my answer to that question in case you haven't already guessed it, but why don't we go to a real expert? Justice Robert Jackson, a prosecutor's prosecutor. Like me, he began his private practice in Buffalo, New York, years before I did, and after that he served as general counsel for the Bureau of Internal Revenue, the U.S. Department of Treasury, the Securities and Exchange Commission, assistant U.S. Attorney General for the Tax Division, later the Solicitor General and the Attorney General of the United States, and then the chief U.S. prosecutor for the Nuremberg Trials. That's an impressive resume. Years later, when he was a justice on the Supreme Court, Justice Jackson stated, quote, any lawyer worth his salt, today we would say his or her, will tell the suspect, his client, in no uncertain terms to make no statement to the police under any circumstances. There's the title of my talk. I'm here to explain to you the surprising and somewhat counterintuitive and admittedly unlikely reasons why Justice Jackson was right. I'm reminded of this because I'm amazed, we're all amazed, by the frequency with which we see newspaper articles coming out all the time from people who really ought to know better, who say, well, I'll talk to the police. I mean, after all, I'm a senator. I'm O.J. Simpson. I'm an experienced, highly polished individual. I've got a lot of experience with public relations, even criminal defense attorneys. There was a local news story here in the Virginia Pilot just a couple of months ago about an experienced criminal defense lawyer who ended up getting convicted of criminal assault because he talked to the police. He was accused of having assaulted another attorney in the hallway. There were no other witnesses to this. A woman said that he grabbed her by the throat during an argument over a case. He denied it. At trial, it was his word against hers. He said, I did not even touch her. But unfortunately for him, when the police had approached him earlier and said, would you be willing to answer some questions? He said, sure, why not? I'm an attorney. I'm a criminal defense attorney. I'm savvy. I'm sophisticated. I've got oratorical prowess. I'm accustomed to dealing with the police, by all means. And then there was a conversation that was not recorded. When the case went to trial, it was no longer his word against hers, because when he testified at trial, I never touched her. The officer took her to the stand and testified, well, when I met with him, he said he did put his hand on her throat, but just as a joke. Then he had to take the stand again and say, that's not true. I never said that. I never admitted to you that I... Now it's his word against two people. Who's telling the truth? We'll never know for sure, but he was found guilty. Now, here's part of the problem. The heart of the problem, as Justice Breyer on the U.S. Supreme Court explained in 1998, is, quote, the complexity of modern federal criminal law codified in several thousand sections of the United States Code and the virtually infinite variety of factual circumstances that might trigger an investigation into a possible violation of the law make it difficult for anyone to know in advance just when a particular set of statements might later appear to a prosecutor to be relevant to some investigation. One expert on criminal law recently noted that estimates of the current size of the body of federal criminal law vary, although it has been reported that the Congressional Research Service can no longer even count the current number of federal crimes. That's right. Even the federal government has lost count. These laws are scattered over all 50 pages of the U.S. Code, encompassing roughly 27,000 pages. Worse yet, these statutes often incorporate by reference to the provisions of administrative regulations. Estimates of how many such regulations exist are even less well settled, although the ABA thinks there may be nearly 10,000. Here's one of those 10,000 federal criminal statutes on the book that you probably never heard about. It's called the Lacey Act, 16 U.S.C. Section 3370. Says it's a federal offense for any person to import, export, transport, sell, receive, acquire, or purchase any fish or wildlife or plant taken, possessed, transported, or sold in a violation of any law, treaty, or regulation of the United States or any Indian tribal law or any state, or any foreign law. People have been convicted in federal court for violating this statute because they brought back a bony fish from Honduras, not knowing that Honduran law, not American, but Honduran law, forbade the possession of the bony fish. People have been convicted under the List law because they were found in possession of what's called a short lobster, a lobster that's under a certain size. Some states forbid you from possessing a lobster if it's under a certain length. It doesn't matter if he's dead or alive. It doesn't matter if you killed it or if you died of natural causes. It doesn't even matter if you acted in self-defense. Did you know that? Did you know it can be a federal offense to be in possession of a lobster? Admit it. Raise your hand if you did not know that. There's the problem. And that's only one of 10,000 different ways. You know, the government gets pretty upset when people like me instruct the client, people like me and Justice Jackson, don't talk to the police, don't answer any questions. But, you know, we can't have it both ways. You people, you've got 10,000 different ways of convicting us. Good for you. But, you know, With the bitter comes to the sweet, with the good comes to the bad. That's 10,000 different ways my client might unknowingly implicate himself in some sort of a criminal transaction. One of the reasons I decided to give this talk, I recently received a phone call from a former student of mine, a Regent Law School graduate, who may be watching this online. We're putting it on the internet. And he told me, hey, I've been approached by the Internal Revenue Service. They want to ask me a couple of questions. They ask if I'd be willing to. But they say that I'm not a suspect, and I know in my heart I don't think I've done anything wrong in violation of the Internal Revenue Service provisions. Lord have mercy. There's no man on earth, there's no woman in this country who can honestly say with complete confidence, I know I have never violated any provision of the Internal Revenue Code. He said, but they say I'm not a suspect, and I know I've done nothing wrong. It's okay if I talk to him? I said, no, you tell them you will not talk to them without immunity. I explained to him why that was true, and he never heard from them again. Okay, why you should never talk to the police. Let me just spell it out for you. Let me make it plain to all of you. These are the top 10 reasons. I don't want to actually really lie to you. I don't really have 10. I don't have time for 10. But I've got time for 8, and that'll be close enough. Number one, and this really ought to be good enough. Contrary to what you laymen instinctively and naturally suppose, it cannot help. There is no way it can help you. Plenty of folks think that it can, and they're always wrong. You cannot talk your way out of getting arrested. Officer Brooke, you've interviewed thousands of criminal suspects. How many times in your experience have you approached someone, asked if you could ask them some questions because prior to the interview you had some evidence pointing to his possible guilt? And because of the extraordinary persuasiveness and eloquence with which he articulated his innocence, you said, oh, sorry, never mind. Bank call, my bad, I won't. And he talked you out of arresting him. Never. Never. It never happens. I've often asked other criminal defense attorneys, in all of your experience, have you ever once had a case where you looked back in hindsight and said, thank God my client talked to the police? They laugh at me. They laugh at me. They say, you've got to be kidding me. You cannot help you. You can't talk your way out of getting arrested. And contrary to what you might suppose if you never said to the rules of evidence, what you tell the police, even if it's exculpatory, cannot be used to help you at trial. Because it's what we call hearsay. Under the rules of evidence, specifically Rule 801 D2A, if you want to look it up, everything you tell the police, as the saying goes, can and will be used against you, but it cannot be used for you. From time to time, I've known attorneys who tried to call to the stand a police officer and say, officer, would you tell the jury what my client told you because what my client told him is actually good for my case? If you tried that at trial, the prosecutor will object to that as hearsay, and the judge will agree. The police will not be allowed, at your request, to tell the jury what your client told him, no matter how good it may be for your case. It cannot help. And that ought to be good enough reason. That ought to be reason enough to keep your mouth shut. But if you're not persuaded, let me go talk about a couple of others. Number two, obviously one of the most obvious, if your client is guilty, as many of them are, but even if he's not, even if he's innocent, he may well admit his guilt with no benefit in return. Now, of course, many of you are thinking to yourself, well, what's so wrong about that? I mean, shouldn't guilty people be confessing? Confession's good for the soul. It's good for law enforcement. It's good for the prisons. Yes, yeah, sure, all those things are true. And like the rest of you, if I or anyone close to me is ever the victim of some sort of a serious crime, I hope they get the right guy. I hope they convict him. I hope they put him away. We all feel that way. Hey, but what's the rush, friends? You don't got to admit your guilt the first time they come by to meet with you. In federal court, 86% of all defendants plead guilty at some point before trial. If your client is guilty and really ought to punish and really ought to have go through some sort of a cleansing act of contrition and fess up and admit his guilt, there'll be plenty of time to do that. They almost always do. No need to rush. No need to tell the police something. Wait and see if perhaps your client can work out some sort of an arrangement where maybe he'll make some sort of compensation to the alleged victim, or maybe he'll be able to get some sort of a discount in his sentence. And he'll be treated fairly then, like everybody else, who had the benefit of a good lawyer who said, please do not talk to the police. And don't forget, by the way, even if your client only admits things that the police already knew, you might think, well, what harm can it do? He says he wants to talk to the police. All he wants to do is admit that he was there. But the cops know that he was there. All right, go ahead and tell them. Well, how can it hurt? It might hurt if the police officer becomes transferred to Minnesota or deceased or injured or comatose or cannot be located by the time of trial. The case will be dismissed if there's no confession. But if your client admits two things, that confession is freely admissible against him and can be a basis for getting him convicted all by himself. Instead of Larry Craig can explain all this to you. The Innocence Project of the United States has confirmed that in more than 25% of all the cases where an innocent man was convicted and then later released from prison after he was exonerated by DNA evidence, in more than a quarter of those cases, these innocent people we know to be innocent, made incriminating statements, delivered outright confessions, or pled guilty. How do they do that? He'll tell us all about it, I trust. Here's a couple of famous examples. You can just ask them. You don't have to take my word for it. There on the left was Eddie Joe Lloyd. He was convicted in 1984 of the murder of a 16-year-old girl in Detroit after he wrote to police with suggestions on how to solve various recent crimes. During several interviews, police fed details of the crime to Mr. Lloyd, who was mentally ill, and they lied to him and convinced this mentally ill man that by confessing, he might help them smoke out the real killer. He later signed a confession and gave a tape-recorded statement. The jury delivered it less than 1 hour before convicting him on the basis of this confession. There was no other substantial evidence against him. The judge said, "I'd hang you if I could," but the death penalty was not available in Michigan at the time. But after almost 2 decades in prison, he was released after DNA evidence proved that this man was innocent and had falsely confessed to a crime that he did not commit. On the right is Earl Washington, who was released from prison just a few years ago here in Virginia after spending 18 years behind bars after being committed of a rape and a murder that we now know he did not commit after having been exonerated by DNA evidence. But this man, Mr. Washington, who was in fact confirmed to be mentally retarded, was able to confess to several crimes at the request of the police, some of which we know he could not have committed. That's the problem. Some of you are thinking to yourself, well, none of this concerns me because I'm not guilty of anything and I never will be and I will never represent people who do. Okay.
You know the funny part about that, Stacy?
What?
Nobody listens.
No doubt about it. And then
nobody
they cry
listens.
Later.
Huh?
I said, and then they cry later.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ignorance is bliss, man.
Yeah, well. All right, let's see what else he has to say.
Let's talk to you people. You innocent folks. Those of you who have never committed a crime and never will, and none of your clients will either. No. And you wouldn't go out with a girl who did. Fine. You better not talk to the police either, okay? Because number three, we'll put the guilty behind us. Forget about them. Let's talk about innocent people. Number three, even if your client is innocent and he denies his guilt and almost entirely tells the truth, odds are good he will easily get carried away and tell some little lie or make some little mistake that will hang him. This is human nature. He gets in there, it's a stressful situation. Imagine a perfectly innocent client. The police say he's been guilty of a murder. He's totally innocent as any one of us. So he goes in there and he meets with the police. He says, "I don't know what you're talking about. I was nowhere near there. I didn't kill him. I've never killed anybody. I don't have a gun. I've never had a gun. I've never touched a gun in my life. I was nowhere near Virginia Beach that night." That last line was a lie. He went over the top. He was getting carried away. He got into this groove. He started saying all kinds of things, almost all of them true, that he knew would tend to exculpate himself. Then he got carried away and just said one thing that wasn't true, and unfortunately for him, they can prove that it wasn't true. He may be convicted on that basis alone. But let's say, well, that's not a problem. I'll tell my client only to tell the truth. I've met with him. I know he won't lie to the police. He won't make any mistakes. Okay, that's still no guarantee you won't be getting into trouble. Because even if your client is innocent and only tells the truth and doesn't say anything that is false, now, already, mind you, we're pretty well nigh into fantasy land. The odds of this being anybody being able to pull this off are really quite slim, no matter how innocent they may be. But just to the same, let's pretend. Let's assume he gives the police nothing but the truth, and he is totally innocent. He will always give the police some information that can be used to help convict him. Always. For example, suppose you tell this to the police. Here's what your client tells to the police in his denial of guilt. "I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't kill Jones. I don't know who did. I wasn't anywhere near that place. I don't have a gun. I've never owned a gun in my life. I don't even know how to use a gun. Yeah, sure, I never liked the guy, but who did? I wouldn't kill him. I've never hurt anybody in my life, and I would never do such a thing." Let's suppose every word of that is true, 100% of it is true. What will the jury hear at trial? "Officer Brooke, was there anything about this, your interrogation, your interview with the suspect that made you concerned that he might be the right one?" "Yes, there was. He confessed to me that he never liked the guy." And then the prosecutor will put that up in big letters, and he'll say, "Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, it's pretty clear that we've got the right guy here. We've proven that he was in Virginia Beach that night. That's opportunity." And remember, Officer Brooke admitted that after extended questioning, he was finally able to get the defendant to admit that he never liked the guy. There's your motive. Motive plus opportunity. Wham, bam. Please. But juries eat it up. And innocent people get convicted this way sometimes. How often? Hopefully not too often, but we know what happens. The United States Supreme Court, don't take my word for this, in Ohio versus Ryan, the Supreme Court of the United States said, quote, "One of the Fifth Amendment's basic functions is to protect innocent men who otherwise might be ensnared by ambiguous circumstances. Truthful responses of an innocent witness, as well as those of a wrongdoer, may provide the government with incriminating evidence from the speaker's own mouth." See, it's not just some criminal defense attorney telling you this. Even the Supreme Court says I'm right. In the fact, under the facts of that case, by the way, in Ohio versus Reiner, a child tragically was died, apparently the result of shaken baby syndrome. Question was who had shaken this baby to death. And one of the possible suspects was a babysitter who had spent some time with the child that week. The babysitter's story was, I don't know what you're talking about. I did not kill the child. I did not see it happen. I don't know who shook the baby. It was never me. I never did anything of any violent nature to the child." The Ohio State Court said, "Well, you've got no Fifth Amendment privilege. You, by your own admission, told the investigators that you've done nothing wrong, that you were not involved, so obviously your answers can't incriminate you." The United States Supreme Court reversed and said, "Well, that's not true. Even though this babysitter denies shaking the child, denies seeing the child die, denies knowing how the child died. This babysitter, by her own admission, apparently the government wanted to ask whether the babysitter might have been with the child at some point that week, during the week prior to the death. And that answer, although by itself not sufficient to convict anybody, could help convict her. That means she's got a Fifth Amendment right to have refused to answer the question the court held, because it could be used to help convict. Almond versus United States, the Supreme Court said more than 50 years ago, eerily prophetic. They said too many Americans, even those who should be better advised, view this privilege as a shelter for wrongdoers. They too readily assume that those who invoke it are either guilty of crime or commit perjury in claiming the privilege. That's not true, and it never has been. But it gets worse. Can it be worse? It can. Number five, even if your client is innocent and only tells her the truth and does not tell the police anything incriminating, which, by the way, is almost impossible to pull this off. I mean, imagine talking to the police for 2, 3, 4 hours, and somebody like him can't somehow manage to extract from you something that could be used to help convict you. That'd be extraordinary. I don't think anybody pulled it off. But even if you could pull it off, there's still a grave chance that his answers can and will be used to crucify you in a court of law if the police, no offense, don't recall his testimony with 100% accuracy. All right, now this brings us back to that pop quiz I warned you about. I told you earlier, remember, it's only been a few minutes, and you weren't up all night, and you weren't the subject of physical duress. You were in the relaxed setting of a classroom here. You were given heads up, advance notice that you would be quizzed on this. Question. We'll start with a couple of easy ones. Remember that article I read you about that? How many people did the police find shot to death last night at that Ocean View apartment that I told you about? A, 1, B, 2, C, 3, D, 4. Who says A? B. C. Get this. Get that with the camera. Show us. Move that camera around. Look how many hands we've got there for C. Okay, D. You're all wrong. Everybody who raised their hand, you are the kind of people who should never talk to the police under any circumstances for as long as you live. Why is C not the right answer, by the way? If you know, raise your hand. Excellent. I didn't say anybody was shot. I didn't say gun, bullet, shooting, firearms. Didn't use any of those words. But I don't blame you if you thought that I did. This is the way the human mind works. We hear things. We fill in details. I said gangland-style slaying. That may or may not imply something, but it doesn't mean that anybody was shot. And that's the problem. You see, even if your client is innocent and only tells the truth and doesn't tell them anything incriminating, and his statement is videotaped, his answers can be used to crucify him. You might say, wait, how can that happen? I insisted. In my insistence, I called the police and I said, look, if you want to talk to my client, you can talk to him, but only if you videotape the whole thing. I don't want there to be any debate between the two of you over what happened. Okay, we'll videotape the whole thing. If the police don't recall their questions with 100% accuracy, he'll be convicted on that statement alone. For example, suppose a man goes to the police. They say, we're investigating a possible murder, a shooting. And the guy says, quote, I don't know who killed Jones, Officer Brooke, with all due respect. It wasn't me. I've never touched or fired a gun in my life. How can that help incriminate this man? How could that possibly be used against this man to help convict him? You would think it's inconceivable. But it's as easy as pie. All the officer has to do is read the statement to the jury, and then the prosecutor says, Officer Brooke, was there anything about that statement that confused you or surprised you? Yes, there was, he says in a moment of sinister high drama in the courtroom. And what was that? And then Officer Brooke turns to the jurors and he says, I never said anything about a shooting. I said we were investigating a murder. He was the one who brought up a gun. Then you turn to your client says, that's not true. I remember he was the one, or one of the cops. I was with them for 3 hours. One of them in the car said something about they said they had a witness that I was the shooter. Okay, I'll put you on the stand. And then your client testifies, no, they did tell me shooting. They mentioned it before I said anything about a gun. They brought it up first. And then the police said, that's not true. And now what, it's your word against theirs? For what? You're gambling with your client's life. And police officers can very easily make a mistake like that, just as so many of you did just a few minutes ago, about whether you recalled having heard me say something about somebody actually being shot. Police take mistakes, innocently, inadvertently, unintentionally, any statement, no matter how it...
What was that last part?
Who are you talking to, me or Nora?
Anybody. They make mistakes.
Yeah, you need to shut up because anything can be misinterpreted. You don't talk until you have counsel. That's it.
That's it.
Inculpatory, it may seem on its face, can be used to crucify you all by itself if the police are either willing to lie, not likely, or if they just have an innocent misrecollection of the details as to what they did and did not tell you before you told them what you said. All of these, by the way, all of these problems disappear if you take Justice Jackson's advice and say, thank you very much, officer, but no thanks. How about this one? Here we go. Now, here's the most surprising of all. I've saved the most surprising one for last. Let's suppose you've got the following scenario. Your client's thinking about talking to the police. He says, I've got nothing to hide. They think that I killed somebody in Virginia Beach last night. Well, this is what your client tells you in confidence. I don't know who robbed that store. It wasn't me. In fact, I've got a pretty good alibi. I wasn't even in Virginia Beach that night, last night. I was 4 hours away visiting my mother in the Outer Banks. Unfortunately, no, I did not pay for gas with a credit card. I used cash, and so I've got no witnesses that can prove I was there except my word, and of course, Mama, for what that's worth, which is nothing. So your client says, well, so the police want to talk to me, and I want to seem cooperative, so what I'll do is I'll tell them that I was in the Outer Banks last night. Now, there's nothing on its face incriminating about any of that. Let's assume, by the way, that you believe with all your doubt, you've given your client a polygraph exam. You've known him for years. You've been going to the same Bible study for 30 years. You know beyond a shadow of a doubt that he's telling you the truth. And he's not admitting anything. He's not admitting motive. He's not admitting opportunity. He's not admitting that he was there. How on earth could this come back to haunt us? How on earth could this come back to be used against us? Be honest. Raise your hand if you really think the answer to that question is, I can't see how it could possibly be used against me. You're afraid I'll call on you, right? I won't call on you. Well, you're wrong. You're dead wrong. You're always wrong. Everything you say, every time you talk to the police, you will regret it. You see, the problem is, here it is. This is the last point. I think it's almost as even if your client is innocent and only tells the truth and doesn't tell the police anything incriminating, and the entire interview, questions and answers, are videotaped, even his truthful answers can be helped to use crucify even an innocent man if the police, through no fault of theirs, end up in the possession of any evidence, even mistaken and unreliable evidence, that anything your client told them was false, even if in fact it was true. Again, going back to this example from a moment ago. Let's suppose I go ahead and I meet with the police. I guess think I got nothing to hide. I tell them I was in the Outer Banks last night, officer. How can that be used to convict me? By itself, it cannot. It cannot help at all by itself. But what if I later find out, to my horror, after I put my cards on the table, that they've got a witness, a girl that I went to high school with, an unimpeachable witness. We've never been enemies. She'd have no reason to lie. She swears she thinks she saw me in Virginia Beach last night, a couple of blocks away from that store, about an hour before it was robbed. Now, her testimony by itself isn't going to help the prosecutor. Hell, if she's all they've got, I'll get this case thrown out before trial. But if, like an idiot, I talked to the police and I told them the truth, I told them I was in the Outer Banks, and now, lo and behold, tragically, it turns out they've got a witness, a false, mistaken, confused, but sincere and credible witness, who can testify that I was here at Virginia Beach, now they're likely to get a conviction. Because what they'll do, I've just turned this cop and this woman into the government star witness. They'll put Officer Brooke on to testify about how my client lied to him about being in the Outer Banks, and then they'll put on this girl who otherwise would have not even helped their case at all, who will testify, no, that's not true, that was a lie. I saw Mr. Duane's client here in Virginia an hour before the robbery, not so far from the store. By herself, she would not have helped the government in any significant way. But what I have just done, you see, is given them the other part of the puzzle, and now I'm doomed. Just ask them. I close with this example. Here we have a couple of recent celebrity examples of why it is that even people who admit nothing always end up denying it. I mean, sorry, they always end up regretting it. On the left, we have Martha Stewart. She was the subject of an extensive government investigation that was looking into the possibility that she was guilty of violations of certain federal laws, security laws, fraud kinds of things. They couldn't pin that on her, but they were able to get a conviction because she denied it. Talking to the police and later to some of the shareholders, she said, no, it's not true. I was not guilty. So they charged her with lying to federal investigators, and they got a conviction, and she was sentenced to 5 months in prison. Marion Jones, on the right side, another person who would still be out today if she had always taken the advice that I'm giving you now, she was asked if she had ever used steroids, a controlled substance. And instead of taking the fifth, she said, no, I never took steroids when I won those Olympic gold medals. Later on, it turned out that she was lying. She worked out a deal. She pled guilty. She admitted that she was lying. And she, over her strenuous, tear-filled objection, even though she has two young children, was just recently sentenced to prison for 6 months. The guy who sold her the steroids, the pusher, he got only 4 months. But she got 6 months because she lied to the police and said that she did not do it. You see the problem. Michael Vick, who recently pled guilty, as you know, to these charges with respect to the operation of this dog combat sort of operation at his home. And sentencing, like many other criminal defendants, even though he eventually pled guilty at sentencing, one of the reasons his sentence was a little harder than it might have otherwise been, the judge said, was because when he initially met with the police, he lied to them and said, I didn't do anything. I didn't do it. I don't know what you're talking about. Even guilty people, but not only guilty people, will always end up regretting talking to the police. So my advice to you, Justice Jackson was right. A sane, competent lawyer in his right mind will always tell every client under all circumstances, I don't care if you're innocent. I don't care if it's the truth. If it's the truth, great. We'll tell the jury all about it. There'll be time enough to put our cards on the table. But before we get there, I haven't seen yet what the police got. They may have mistaken and confused witnesses who will contradict even the truthful stuff that you say. We have no way to know, no way to predict the information that you give them, even if truthful and reliable, will end up unwittingly dispelling our demise. So keep your mouth shut. Don't answer any questions. Let's take the Fifth. You'll be glad that you did. God bless America. God bless the Bill of Rights and the geniuses who bequeathed it to us. But now, in fairness, I give equal time, or what's left of equal time, to a police officer who will explain to the extent to which, if any, he agrees or disagrees with anything I've got to say. I have no idea to know what he's going to say, but it'll be interesting. Here, let me give him the microphone. Let's give him a hand. Officer George Crew, the Virginia Beach Police Department.
I cannot talk that fast. Not even interviewing. I'm going to take the podium here, Professor. I took notes on some of the things you said. And everything he said was true. Okay? And it was right, and it was correct. And I'm just going to give you a few ideas. I'm going to tell you a few examples. But first, I'm going to give you a little information.
What do you think about what the professor said?
Who are you talking to, me and Nar?
Oh, no, let's go ahead, Steve.
Did Nar disappear?
No.
I don't know.
What do you think of the professor, Nar?
I don't know. Like I said, we all know what we need to do and what we not need to do. Most of the ones that have no clue are the ones that are stupid enough to be there in the first place. That's how I look at it. I got popped with the blackjack. They tried to pop it on me, and nope, found it. Was not going to give up where I got it from. Had no problem staying in there for hours telling them, I have no idea. Found it in the field.
Okay.
Worked for me.
All right.
You know, but like I said, unfortunately, people don't know when to shut up. And they think that, you know, by telling an officer everything, it is going to make it better. It doesn't. It gives the officers free rein to say whatever they want. They watch your demeanor. They watch everything about you.
Uh-huh.
And I did not know that they lied.
Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
You don't know they lied?
Oh, they lie. They do.
I've seen so much of it. I was being nice. I wasn't being nice. You know,
right.
Like I said, I've seen enough. I know exactly what they do. You know, I've seen them draw guns on people I knew that didn't have anything to do with anything. They just look like they fit the description. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
All right. What do you think?
And you know you're not supposed to put your hands on an officer, correct?
Yeah.
Because why? They look at that as assault. You assaulted an officer.
All right.
You know how many times I sat there and put my hand on their chest and said, whoa, wait a minute here.
The one time I did that, I'll never do that again.
I'll tell you what. They've never bothered me in this town. I don't know why, you know. But I've sat there and, I mean, I've approached them calmly. Nothing for them to, you know, fear from me. But, you know, I've gone up and I put my hand on their chest. And, you know what, there's nothing going on here. No reason for you to be here. And then,
all right.
You're lucky because... any of the local boys over here, if I would have put my finger on their chest, like the one time, all I did was raise my hand up. I went to do it. I had two of them on faster than I knew what to do with. Yeah. If they come for me, they always come at least 2 to 3 cars strong because I don't go down without a fight. that's it, you know. I can't stand them. I can't stand people.
Well,
that...
neither can I, but unfortunately, you know, at times when I've had to deal with them at my home because of other people or circumstances, why they were brought here in the first place, I've been very calm And I've had no problem going right up to them and say, look, you know, there's nothing going on here.
All right. Let's see what Fran's got. Go ahead before I bring Fran on.
Oh, me? Oh, last time they came to my house, I went out kicking and screaming, and as the neighbors came outside, I just screamed police brutality, which they didn't like too much. But I figured, hey, if there was a show going on and everybody wanted to watch, I'd give them a reason to watch.
Well, you see, if I was you, I would have been hollering, I do not consent to any search of my person, my property, or anything. And just keep repeating it until
I gave them such a hard time, dude. They didn't know what to do with me because, I mean, they knew who I was, but I refused to give up information. I gave them a tough time for like 4 hours. You know, it went back and forth. They kept me cuffed and everything. I think they were actually in fear of me, you know, but, hey, what are you going to do? It is what it is.
All right, let's see what Fran's got to say. Hello, Fran.
Well, I had to unmute you. Well, I'll tell you what, my experience with the police, not here in San Diego, but in New York, was totally different. And the reason being is I had 5 foster kids. And this one woman cop, she had more balls than most of the men cop there. Not a big deal. However, when one of my kids got in trouble, she was training a new recruit. And she says to the recruit, she says, you know what, we got to get out of here. We got to arrest the kid. And he says, no, you don't understand. We have to get out of here. She knew my rep like I knew hers. She made that young recruit get his ass out of there. And it's like, you know, it's kind of a respect thing back and forth. But at the same time, when the police needed an interpreter, they would drop deaf people off at our front door. Or they didn't care the fact that if I had just pulled a $12 shift,
mm-hmm.
they would come get me to take me to the hospital or to the jail to interpret. And it's like, you know what? There's got to be more justice than this in life. But everybody's different. Here in California, I don't know. It's taken a while for me to get some kind of a motorcycle respect from the motorcycle cops here. I don't know if that one cop is retired or not, but all I can see is this old motorcycle cop, and when he would get so close, his little white mustache on the right-hand side would switch. That's when you knew you were pushing your boundaries. But, you know, it is what it is. You're going to come across good ones, bad ones, and those that are going to bite you. I prefer those that are going to bite if you'll bite somebody else. I do have a real quickie, though.
Anyone in
California, please. Any of you in California, if you're going to pay DMV, do not use bill pay. Use a check. Go back to the old system and use a check. Sometimes with your water bill, you may or may not run into the problem, or it may be sporadic. Once again, when in doubt, go back and use an old fucking check. It will probably save you a considerable amount of money. And paperwork, because now I have to fill out paperwork showing that they cashed the check to get my money back that I had to pay, tags again, and late fees and additional fees for something I had already paid and they cashed.
Uh-huh.
And I also had to cancel 2 payments to DMV because they still had money. So at least it's saving me paperwork on 2 of them, but it didn't help me with the late fees. Or the ticket, by the way. So for any of you out there, if when in doubt, go back and use one of them stupid paper things that you send in the mail. So, yes, you're going to have to go buy some stamps, and you're going to have to go envelopes and this. Other than anything that is government in California, you are running the risk, if you do, through your bank, no pay. Just an FYI. I guess you can tell I'm a little bit angry at that.
Yeah.
We've had, I don't know about other states, but we're having our really big share of motorcycle collisions and accidents and what have you. Did you get the young lady? Because we're still trying to find out if she needs blood or what have you.
No, I didn't.
You didn't get that?
No.
Yeah, last Friday there was, you know what bothers the hell out of me is I know that motorcycle. I've seen that motorcycle. It's an old white cop bike.
Uh-huh.
Now, from my understanding, it was a young lady from Alaska that was riding it. She was in critical condition. She hit the car broadside, car backed out of a driveway or whatever. She hit it broadside. She somehow wound up under the car, for the fireman lifted the car to get her out.
Wow.
So I don't know what condition she is or any other information. That's why I sent you that one. I thought I had sent it to you. I guess I didn't, but can't get any information primarily because we're not family or what have you.
Right.
But, of course, you have to know the person's name to find out if you're family. Well, you can't get that either because that's confidential information. All right, so let's go around the roses. but we are having our unjustified share of being towed, hit, crashed, you name it, it's happening. This week alone in San Diego, ones that were on the news, not including the others that were just incidentals, of course, depends on how incidental you were. But
well, what do you think about the Easter Bunny getting pulled over by the CHP?
Oh, I loved it. I even put a comment before he got pulled over.
Yeah, I think it was a setup.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably. But you know what? It's got so many hits throughout, everywhere. If it was a setup, then you know something? I'm glad it was. Because it just goes to show that we have a sense of humor. Not all of us, but some of us.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, they always put this guard on our back. We're the bad guys. We're the ones that get hit, and we're still the bad guys. I can't figure that one out, but whatever. Like I say, overall, this is America. You can drive drunk. You can drive with a headset. You can drive with a texting in your hand.
Well, yeah, but did you see that thing today? I'm 5 North, coming north. Texting ticket, $159.
That's pittance.
As I was coming up 5, and I saw that, and then I just started looking. I counted 79 people texting while they were driving.
Well, see, you know what my thing is? Driving drunk or texting, and you hurt somebody severe, you automatically get a to and from work, driver's license only, and an ankle bracelet. Which means you're under house arrest for at least a year. You kill somebody, that's at least 5 years of house arrest. Because if it's a house arrest, understand this. Taxpayers don't have to pay to feed them.
Yeah.
And that seems to me a lot better outlook than putting them in jail. Put them under house arrest. Get someone else to have to feed them, wipe their ass, and work. And if they can't, then I guess they're going to have to be on welfare in some kind of studio or whatever with someone who's kind enough to actually bring them food to their house. Because they will be under house arrest. It will be cheaper than putting them in jail.
Uh-huh.
Hey,
are you talking hands-free?
Personally, if it's hands-free, it still should be not allowed because their attention is not on the road.
Right.
I absolutely almost got hit today in a parking lot because the woman pulled into the parking space. She felt that she was a little bit off center, so she immediately backed up. I was already there, though. She didn't even look to see if anybody was there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
No, it's like, what are you going to do?
Well,
right away they say, well, I didn't see him. That's the first thing they say, I didn't see him.
I know that. But then why do you have a fucking driving license? You know, there are times when people do make a mistake. I'm not saying that that's, you know, we do. It's human nature. However, to automatically assume that other people are going to pick up and rectify your mistake is not going to always happen. And it's not safer to the rest of us that have to pay the tab for it. Now, how many people who are drunk, in fact, statistically, anyone who's already been bagged for a DUI will be bagged again for a DUI, statistically, until either something happens or they go to jail. And even then, after they come out, statistically, they're going to drink and drive again. All right, so when these people are actually bagged for a DUI, why do they not have an ankle bracelet that detects alcohol?
No, why don't they have an ankle bracelet that shoots 50,000 volts through their fucking system, knocks them on their ass, and they're incapacitated?
Well, the thing is, they should have that ankle bracelet on if they've been bagged for a DUI. And automatically, from that day forth, you have any alcohol within the next 5 years, you are going to go to jail, period. It's real simple.
Mm-hmm.
I have this really strong belief, and that's like, you know, paper is not worth anything if you have filed a restraining order. But my thing with a restraining order is really, really simple. And I bet you to the dollar, it will be very effective. You come within 1,000 feet of someone that has a restraining order from you, you have this chronic dog collar. And every time you get a foot closer, it gets stronger. And it will get stronger until the point of where it will actually kill you. You better hope you're not stuck on it anyway.
Nah.
But you know what? Guess what? You better hope you have a cell phone. You can call someone and say, yo, I'm stuck in freeway. I don't know where that person is, but my collar is getting to be a real chime here. And hope that they can turn it off. But you know what? At this point, they have proven with a restraining order, it does nothing. It doesn't. Anyone that has put in a restraining order because of abuse or anything along those lines, they usually turn around and eventually go back and they will kill them. So I guess the piece of paper really didn't do much, did it?
No.
But that dog collar will.
Yeah.
I guarantee you that it will work better than a gun. With a gun, you'd actually have to swap them. With a dog collar, with an electronic device, you don't have to. It will take care of it. No.
Okay.
How simple it is. And people think I'm vicious. I don't know why.
Yeah, just a little bit.
What? No. What would you consider vicious about that?
Nothing.
Thank you. See? It's real simple.
Yeah. Tied to a chair and worked over with a ball peen hammer sounds good to me.
Yeah, but you see, you know what the thing with that is? Then I would be the one that would be charged with, I actually thought about it, though. I would be the
No.
Yeah, I'd be the one charged.
Silence is golden, but duct tape is silver.
Yeah. I'd still be the one charged with assault, honey.
No, you wouldn't.
Mm. That's why I don't have a gun in the house, because I would so go out there and use it. Just because.
Yeah. No, I was at Bill's yesterday, and I walked out, and a guy pulled up, kind of dressed, kind of like trying to be a biker dressed, and he was talking, and he said he heard a whine on his bike, so Bill sent Steve out there, he come back, and then he was talking to me and Bill, and this guy happened to be a cop from Oceanside.
Oh, terrific.
I won't tell you his name, but... He said, Bill, I wanna start an MC. There's my buddies and I, and but I don't know how to do it because I'm a cop. And I would never rat on anybody and da 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 da.
All right.
Yeah, it took all I had not to start laughing.
And then I
looked at his bike. And he's riding, he's got shotgun pipes. Then I looked at his helmet. He had a derby helmet with a little bill with a dot sticker on the back. I said, that's not, according to you guys, after he said where he worked, that's not a safe helmet. Yeah, a couple of guys, the one guy that's writing all the tickets for helmets now, told him, yeah, that's not a safe helmet, da 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 da. Well, that prick got off work, he got in his bike, and put the same fucking kind of helmet on.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So, the last time I went through this, because I got 35 people that filled IA complaints that they had turned in, the last time that I went through this, I went down to the parking lot, and I set my video recorder up on the dash of the car, because I didn't want to be seen. And I videotaped, and I counted 12 of them, came out, where the same stuff we do, ride the same kind of bikes, and the same pipes, whatever, and these cocksuckers will pull you over and tell you you're not wearing something safe, or your bike is too loud, and we get back to that. Like Bill said, when the guy was talking about this, Bill said, well, rank has its privileges. And I said, fuck that. And I told this guy, I said, you know, I'm going to ask you a question. You pull me over on my bike, and you ask me about my pipes. And I say to you, do you have a meter? And he says, I don't need a meter.
Okay.
And I say, are you sure about that? But then I stop, and I'm thinking, and I said, well, do you know about the law that was passed the first of this year? About motorcycle profiling? No. I said, and I gave him one of my cards, and I said, here, you need to go read it. And I wrote it down on the back of the card where to go read it. Did not know. Sent me a text today. Did not know. So I sent a text to the chief, the guy in charge of traffic, the guy in charge of internal affairs, and the lieutenant that's busting balls down there. And Henry says, but they're not on the clock, freedom for all. Yeah, Henry. And when they pull you over here in Oceanside and give you a ticket for your helmet, is it going to be freedom for all when you know the fucking guy writing the ticket is wearing the same shit you wear or riding the same kind of bike with the same kind of pipes? See, everybody has a comment about it until something happens to them. If everybody remembers, I had these guys for 4 months, 11 days, and 6 hours. They didn't fuck with a motorcycle in Oceanside.
That's true.
They didn't fuck with anybody on a motorcycle.
Dang, I should have ridden up there more often then.
Yep.
Serious note also, and this is black car, smoked windows. They have a decal on their window showing dynamite or like a TNT blowing stuff up. Apparently you can go on Spoof or whatever to check to see if it's for real. And the individuals that are driving these cars are actually given one mark or two marks. The only person who gets one mark if you actually get two. You know, so it's kind of like bowling for dollars, except for where the pins. Just kind of beware. Black car, smoke windows, and it has little TNT or little, you know, sticks of dynamite on the, as a decal.
Yeah.
Keep your wits about you. This one, I'm so tired of having to be careful of this sucker opening a car door on me. This one throwing coffee out the window at me. If it weren't for the fact that it keeps me from killing people, I think I would probably give it up.
Yeah.
But that's not the answer, because I know my personality, it's the only thing that is saving society out there is me riding a motorcycle.
Well, you know, it's... Going back to if they had to testify against you.
Yeah.
Police lie under oath. Their testimony shouldn't be trusted more than any other witness. Because thousands of people plead guilty to crimes every year in the United States because they don't know the odds of a jury's believing their word over our police officers are slim to none. As a juror whom you are likely to believe, the alleged criminal in an orange jumpsuit or two well-groomed police officers in uniforms who just swore to God they're telling the truth. The whole truth and nothing but. But as one of my colleagues recently put it, everyone knows you have to be crazy to accuse the police of lying. Well, I'm here to tell you, the guy that I was talking to yesterday, I told him, I said, you know, I proved in court that some of you guys lie. And this guy, without missing a beat, said, whoever that attorney was, whoever coached the defendant, you guys did a fantastic job. And that lawyer, the judge tore that police officer a new asshole for lying. Caught her red-handed. Dead bang, fucking every word out of her mouth was a fucking lie. And because all that documented, these fuckers, some of them do, some of them don't.
Well.
I say I was doing 75 miles an hour in a 55 when I seen him at the fucking light behind me. And I knew he was going to find something to pull me over. I talked to a friend of mine who's in a club today, who got stopped in Long Beach and told he was straddling the line. Well, isn't that what you do when you split traffic?
Usually, yeah.
Ran out here, isn't that what we do when we split traffic?
Yes, that is what we are doing.
But gave him a ticket for straddling the line.
I don't even know what's actually happening with that particular law right now. Someone said that that's actually been rescinded.
It has.
It has.
Went back to the way it was.
So then, at this point, there is nothing.
No, the only thing that I am pissed off now, Henry. But the only thing that didn't change, Fran, was if traffic's going 20 to 30 miles an hour, you can only go 10 miles an hour faster. That's it. But, again, as the CHP said in open court and on TV and the news, and when I talked to him in person, guys that do that, there's no way for us to catch them because they can't get through traffic fast enough to catch them. And when we talked about this today, Bill and I, Bill told me about a chippy that got next to him. He shot up around Bill in a turn anyway. And when the light turned green, the guy took off. And he kept switching lanes and doing all kinds of shit. And Bill followed right behind him. Bill said that was the fastest he's gotten to Escondido on 78 in his whole living in California.
Wow. 78, huh?
Mm-hmm. He said that guy was doing 80 plus and Bill was right on his ass, waving at the other bikers to get behind him.
One thing I will tell you that I have noticed, I don't know if it's because we are on hard times, but I am noticing, coincidentally, for white lining, is that there's more and more trash in between the cars. It may be coincidence. I'm not sure. But I do notice more and more garbage. I'm noticing more and more gravel.
Yeah, I'm noticing more and more bolts, nuts, and ball bearings falling out of my pockets, too.
That's different. That is so different.
No, I could usually just flip them, but I let them fall out of my pocket. I got them in my pocket on my vet, on my cut, that just the way that when I unzip it, they all fall out.
Well, this concerns me because of the white lining and finding it in between lanes of traffic. So on top of watching for people opening car doors and this and that and all of these other things, now having to concern yourself with watch for trash in between cars when you're white lining just out. I mean, just sucks. Potholes were bad enough. But now to deal with trash in between, that just, I'm sorry, that just really sucks.
Yeah. Well, let me get back to this. Let me finish this with this guy talking here. Stacey, you got any comments?
I'm going to put myself on mute.
I'm just sitting here listening to y'all. Carry on.
Okay. Nora?
No.
Okay. I'll be
the only,
right back.
The only...
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Who, me?
You were going to say something?
Yeah, the only thing with, like, some of the things that Fran was saying, being on a bike, I can't relate to it because I don't drive a bike as of yet, you know? So it's like when you guys are talking about that stuff, I'll just sit and listen because I really don't have, I don't know, the knowledge. Is that the right word I'm looking at? To, like, stick my two cents in, you know?
Uh-huh.
Because I don't want to sound...
Let me ask you this. Okay, you're on the freeway.
Yep.
There's two rows of bikes, 20 deep, coming up behind you.
Yep.
Going 10 or 15 miles an hour faster than you are. What are you going to do?
Shit, I'm getting out of their way.
Out of their way?
You know, but
how do you get
always,
out of their way?
I use my directional, for one, and being that they will be traveling faster than I, I'm going to go into the lowest speed lane and let them go on by me. But, I mean, being motorcycle friendly, I never roll right up onto a bike. Like when you stopped at a light, I give them a good 20 feet, you know, so they can do their thing. I don't do the things that most of the general public does, and whenever I'm driving down the road and there are bikes, no matter if they're Hollies, Rice Rockets, whatever, I'm very, very in tune with using my turning signals, etc., or allowing myself to enough time to stop, not like stopping at the last minute where I could possibly land up with a bike or on top of my roof. You know, it just, I guess I have more courtesy when it comes to bikers in general, and it's just too bad that everybody didn't think my way, because, I mean, someday soon here, I'm going to be the person driving the bike and would be hoping that everybody allowed me the same courtesy.
Well, when you get done smoking that crack pipe, let me know, because that ain't going to happen.
Yeah, well, I realize that, but hey, I don't smoke crack. You know, it's just, I don't know, man. People just need to smarten up a little bit. And you would think that they would, because, you know, I'm seeing more and more people on bikes, more and more females riding bikes, whether you're with a club or you're independent or you're just, you know, doing your own thing. And with that many motorcycles, you know, out on the road, with each year going by, you know, a couple of more hundred thousands of people should be aware. You know, they really should. People don't become aware until something bad happens to somebody they know or their family, or, you know, then all of a sudden they're aware of everything. But you shouldn't wait till the last minute like that.
Uh-huh.
But carry on.
All right, hold on. All right, we'll go back and let this guy finish up here real quick.
As was said earlier, I've interviewed thousands of people. I've interviewed people with foreign police departments. When I was in the Navy, I was in law enforcement, and I was a criminal investigator. Thank God we're in the United States, because most interviews in Italy, Spain, and so forth start out physically. Okay, there's no police abuse over there. They can do pretty much what they want, anytime they want, anyhow they want. So just be aware of that and be thankful for you. Biggest question I was asked when I first, I am a 3L, and there's some of my classmates in here. Best day is coming up, May 10th, when we get to leave. So those of you that are applying, and I told a couple of people this, you think it's hard getting into law school? Try getting out. Okay? A couple of things I was asked. How do I quit from getting speeding tickets? Very easy question. Quit speeding. Okay? But something Professor Duane brought up, are any of you guilty of anything? How many of you drove here today? Anybody go above 55 on the interstate? Anybody drive at home and go above 55 on the interstate? Because if you stay...
I did it intentionally.
And there you go. And people are inherently honest, and that's their biggest downfall. Okay? They really are. Or they want to tell their story. And if you drive 55 on the interstate where it's 55, the only thing you're going to do is meet the person behind you, because they're going to rear end you and you're going to get run over. Okay, so that's a fact. But everybody does something that they can get in trouble for. I can follow as a police officer when I was in uniform. I can follow a car however long I needed to, and eventually they're going to do something illegal, and I can pull them over. And justifiably illegal to pull them over. So just be aware of that. Don't think you're so innocent in such a thing. When you get stopped for a traffic ticket, everyone likes to be somewhat honest. And what's the first thing the police officer asks you? Do you know how fast you're going? But if the speed limit's 35, you'll say, oh, 38, 40.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you something. The last time a guy pulled me over and walked up to the window and he asked me, or I asked him, why did you stop me? Or no, he said, do you know why I stopped you? And I looked at him without missing a beat and said, what did I do? He said, well, you swerved. I said, well, yeah, I usually get nervous when somebody's behind me following me with a gun.
Because you want to be kind of honest even though you're doing 50. He just said 38 and 40. You just admitted to breaking the law. You just confessed. So they can go to court with that, with a confession, that you were exceeding the speed limit. Okay, so you need to think about those things, and when you do become defense attorneys, which I may, who knows, you need to think about those things for your clients. The other thing you need to think about your clients, and this is going to seem very terse, people are stupid. Your clients are stupid, and I've had defense attorneys come up to me. Matter of fact, one on a motion to suppress just Tuesday come up to me and tell me his client was stupid. Okay? They're very straightforward. They do foolish things. They talk to the police. And you guys need to be aware of that. Now, in my past...
Did you hear that? That's a cop telling you not to talk to the police.
And it wasn't exaggerated. I have interviewed thousands of people. I have a, I've arrested and dealt with over 1,000 felonies. Well, actually, more than 1,000 felonies. Probably about 1,000 felonies, 2,500 misdemeanors. 98% of them conviction rate. 80% of them I don't even have to go to court. Why? Because there's confessions. Because they confess. So these people have no problem. The hardened criminals have no problem talking to the police. People like to tell their story. And they'll sit in that room and think about it. You're picked up by the police. You're in a little room. There's one chair here. There's a desk. There's another chair. What's the thing you want the most right at that point? Get out of that room. Be out of that room. Think the police officer's shift is ending in 15 minutes. Does the police officer want to get out of that room? My overtime rate's $58 an hour. Do I want to get out of that room? I have no problem. I'll stay there for 10 hours. I'll take that $600. Okay. So I have no motivation to want to leave. You do. And that's how we get you to try to talk. I have my job. My job is to develop probable cause, develop a good case. A great case is a case with a confession. Get it to the Commonwealth's attorney so that they can prosecute the case with little, if any, effort. The Commonwealth attorneys love those cases, a little in any effort, because they come with a stack of files that high in court every day. So they love those cases. That's my job. The defense attorney's job is to hope they get to their client before I do and make sure they don't talk to me, no matter what. Give you an example, and this will go right along with what Professor Duane was putting up his examples. I had an interview that went something like this. Were you involved in the burglaries? No, I had nothing to do with them. You didn't have anything to do with it? No. You were in a car with all this stolen stuff in it? You had nothing to do about it? No. You knew it was there? Yeah. Okay, now we got possession of stolen property, felony. Okay? But you had nothing to do with it? No. So what did you need the money for? Well, I had to pay some of my court costs from another thing I got in trouble for. Oh, so he took the money from stealing the stuff. I have enough to charge him now with burglary. Simple as that. Well, did you see the picture on that camera of the house with the Christmas decorations? This is a real case scenario. Yeah, did you go in that house? No, I didn't go into that one. So, there's ways around it. There's ways to get around people who try not to talk to you. And, again, as Professor Duane said, if you wanted to go and say you wanted to go into a boxing match, $100 if you win. You've never boxed before. You have to face somebody who's an Olympic boxer. You're going to lose. You're going to face somebody who's been interviewing people for, in my case, 28 years. You're going to lose unless you're purely innocent. Now, on the other side of it, I don't want to put anyone that's innocent in jail. But I try not to bring anyone into the interview room that's innocent. And there are a couple that I have let walk away because they were innocent. Okay, the interviews. How do we approach the interviews? There's a number of ways to approach interviews. There's a number of types of people that I deal with. First thing I do, anyone know what they get told first when they're in an interview? Miranda. Miranda warning. Okay, it's not a right. You don't have a right to Miranda. Those rights have always been there. It's called the Constitution. You're just teaching. You're doing a real quick class on the Constitution for these people. Usually they don't listen to it. And this is the way I give my Miranda warning. Look, I have to tell you this. Just pay attention. Okay, they're usually sitting back or they're very attentive. You have the right to remain silent. You understand that? Yes. Anything you say may be used against you in a court. I don't have to say it will be. I say it may be. Okay, and they get that. You have a right to an attorney, and if you can't afford one, one may be appointed to represent you. Got that. You can decide not to talk, quit talking to me at any time and exercise these rights. You understand that? Sure. Now, before I do the primary thing that's needed with those rights, you have to get a waiver. I say, now, before you say anything, let me tell you what I know. And over all the time I've had to put together what this individual was supposedly involved in, and I only say supposedly because Professor Duane's sitting over there, that this individual was involved in, I will tell the story that I've put together, and it'll be pretty close to what happened. And I can see that it's pretty close to what happened because that individual starts slumping down in their chair, they'll put their hand to their face, doing this in their mind, oh, my God, I'm going to jail forever. Okay, and I can see it. I said, now that you know what I know, do you want to talk to me? And why do I do that? Because if I didn't do that, if I said, you want to talk to me, they'll say no. So I give them the time to think about, and then comes the next phrase. Now, before you start talking to me, let me tell you the difference between a lie and a truth. If you lie to me, and I get before the judge, and I tell the judge that you were dishonest with me, that's just not going to make them happy. But if I get before the judge and tell them you're honest, straightforward, willing to take responsibility for your actions, that is going to help you. That's not a lie, though. That is true. In Virginia Beach courts, it will help them. You know, they may not get 5 years. They may get 3 years. They're still going to prison, or they're still going to have a felony, but it will help them. And then I have to determine what kind of person I have. And there's two types. There's the one, like I mentioned to you earlier, where I have to talk to them about different things, get into their own skin, as the word is, and try and get them to talk to me and discuss things. I had a sexual assault case. I had to talk to the guy how hot the woman was, and I understand where he was coming from. And when I said that, we were buds. And he started talking to me, and he's still sitting in prison. Okay, so you've got to get in there, and you've got to go places. The other side is, I can't try and act like that individual acts. Okay? I can't try and act like what we call lovingly a hood rat. I can't try and act and talk like him. Because I'm an older white guy. We don't talk like that, and that would be an insult. And you can't insult people. It doesn't matter who they are. It doesn't matter where they grew up. It doesn't matter where they're from. You can't insult people like that. You have to be yourself. So you have to get into their mindset and the way they're thinking and have a discussion with them. The other type of person is the one that likes to tell a story. This young man, great man, I love him to death. He didn't go to jail because I went to bat for him because I felt sorry for him. He was a newlywed. He was having money problems. Former Marine. I said, tell me what happened. And he told me this beautiful story about what happened. What he had done is he had sold a piece of equipment that his ex-employer had that he had stolen. He told me the beautiful story of what happened about him finding it on the side of the road and all that kind of stuff. I didn't even question about him after he finished his whole story. Very unplausible, but very beautiful story. I sat there and listened to it for 15 minutes. I looked at him, I said, you stole the stuff from your boss, didn't you? Yes, sir, I did. I had nothing. I really had nothing except the fact that he had sold it. So there's those types of people. And then the third type, the one who tries to be the hood, who tries to be the criminal, who cries like a baby when they walk into jail, but when they're on the street, they're as tough as rocks. You go in there with your paperwork, you sit down, you just start doing paperwork. And usually I have a videotape sitting on top of it, just for measure, so they think I have a videotape. And you just sit there. Don't tell them Miranda. Just sit there and wait for them to start talking. Because they will. They want to talk. People want to communicate. They hate silence. That's why when people speak, you hear, when they're talking, because they need to fill that void with something. People hate silence. So that's the other one. A couple tricks of the trade, and I'll share this with you for when you may go in an interview room. If you're going to be attorneys, it could happen. Videotapes are wonderful things. I use a tape recorder. How many of you think if you saw a tape recorder, that would make you not want to talk? They talk, and this is how I do it. I bring the tape recorder and say, look, I'm going to use this recorder because my writing's terrible.
And when they tell me that, I say, well, just so we get the record straight, I'm putting my recorder here too. You can't do that. Why are you doing it?
I can't read it if I write it down, so I'm going to use this. Is that all right with you? Don't have to ask them. Is that all right? Yeah, no problem. So I turn it on. And they watch the tape recorder. And if I have a problem with the interview, I'll say, I want to talk to you for a second, just off the record. Everyone here off the record? Like a unicorn. No such thing. I pick up the tape recorder. I borrow this. I pick up the tape recorder and I go click and turn it off and set it right in front of them. And they look at the tape to make sure it's not turning. Interview rooms have microphones in them and video cameras. And everything that happens in there is recorded. My tape means nothing because I'm recording it anyways. And then I start talking to them quietly. And they start telling me stuff. And they do something like that, except it's crying. More crying. So that's another way. So you see how there's an unlevel playing field here. Even with the most educated individual, there's an unlevel playing field. If you talk to the police, everything's going to be written down. If you get pulled over for a ticket, they give you the ticket, and you pull off. You ever see the cop pull off right after you? Usually not. That's because on the back of their ticket, they're writing down everything you said. And it's going to come into court if you go to court. Everything that's said, I write down. Every phone call I make has to have a listening device on it. Is that illegal? How many parties need to know that a phone conversation in Virginia is being recorded? One. Me. I know it's recorded. I get many, many confessions over the phone. Okay, back to the people. Yes, they're stupid. Okay, people are stupid. I had a young man who told me straight up, I'm going to college. I'm going to law school. I'm too smart. You'll never find out what happened. Okay. He was going to Tidewater Community College, the law school of, I suppose, Tidewater Community College. He was the partner to the one who I told you to interview about just a little while ago, where I would ask him what he needed the money for. He was his partner. And he was very smart, so he thought. He thought he was a very intelligent individual. I ended up arresting him 5 times out of his house. His mother hated me. She liked me the first time. She apologized. She didn't really like me much the second time. It got to the point where she really hated me after that. He's doing 8 years upstate. He's very smart because he decided to tell me how smart he was. And in telling me how smart he was, he let it slip that he doesn't sell stolen stuff to pawn shops, he sells it to flea markets because they do not have to report to the state. I know how to drive to a flea market just as good as anyone else and go look for stuff that I'm looking for. So he was trying to impress me with his ability to be smarter than I was, and he confessed. So people are inherently stupid, especially criminals. Now, and don't get me wrong, there are some very intelligent criminals out there, and most of them work in really big office buildings and wear suits. Yep, she went to jail. Is she hurting? No. But there are some very intelligent street criminals out there as well that get other people to do their bidding and so forth and so on, and people are afraid to turn on them. But there are some very foolish people. Just a couple other things. I do a thing usually with younger people, usually between the age of, I try not to deal too much with juveniles, but between the age of 16 and 25, is once they've talked to me. Now, let's back up a little bit. You don't need a recording in court for a statement. As Professor Duane said, it's his word against my word if he was a defendant. Number one, and this is the way it works, and this is the way the real world works, in case you guys haven't been out there, that's outside the windows out there. The jury looks at a defendant sitting next to a defense attorney. That's strike one, because the jury is already looking at that someone as that being someone who did something that put them in that chair. Number two, they get a uniformed police officer up there. They get someone wearing a suit as a detective up there that is a professional witness. That's strike two. So now they have a professional witness against them. And then if they've confessed and that professional witness is going to sit there and read from his or her notes, the confession, that's strike three. Go get your orange jumpsuit. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. So they have all the strikes against them. And I know you're innocent until proven guilty, but it's a jury of your peers. And the perception is if you're sitting next to a defense attorney, you have to prove you're innocent. And that's just the perception of a lot of the jury, no matter how many jury instructions they get. They still perceive that person is a hoodlum, is a criminal. And no matter how hard some defense attorneys try to put their clients in suits and have them sit up at the table, if the trial is a long trial, they fall back to their old ways and they start acting and speaking in a way that's not very good for their case. So saying that, you don't have to have a recording. My suppression hearing, a statement was trying to be suppressed, because when I record a confession or an interview, because we don't do interrogations, the police, we do not do interrogations. That's a bad, mean, Nazi kind of word, okay? We do interviews, okay? You'd be amazed how much difference it makes when you use that one word versus interrogation. I'll take it off the tape, and I'll have my secretary put it to paper. Immediately afterwards, I'll take that tape, and I'll scan it over my magnet, throw it in my box, so I can use it again. I do not keep the tape. It is not evidence. It's not required to be evidence. It is there. If it's there for the court, it's just extra. You don't have to have that. But it's really good to have. The suppression hearing, he tried to suppress that. After I testified, the defense counsel stood up and says, well, Judge, I really don't have anything to say. And the judge, Judge Canada, said, motion denied. And let's move on and go to court. So you don't have to have recordings. You don't have to have videotapes. The police videotapes, that's just extra. If you got that police officer sitting there testifying, you don't have to have that videotape. You got the guy that was right there to tell you what happened. But it's always nice to have those extra things. And what I do for these young people is I'll say, look, the person who you broke into their house are very upset. They're very angry because you sold their stuff at the pawn shop. Pawn shop stuff, sold them. They don't get their stuff back. They're very angry. They want you to go to prison. Okay? They may be very angry. They want you to go to prison. They may want to. To lessen that, that's the start of what's commonly known as a lie, because we are allowed to lie in interviews. To lessen that...
See? They even tell you. They're allowed to fucking lie. So 9 times out of 10, anything coming out of the fucking mouth is a lie.
You might want to make them happy. And the reason that's a lie is because when it is a felony in the Commonwealth of Virginia, the victim has nothing to do with the prosecution or how long do people go to prison or any of that kind of stuff. We're prosecuting them, not the victim. But to lessen that, what I'd like you to do is write an apology letter to the person whose house you broke into. Just write it out. Well, how do I write it? In your own words, just write, you know, I'm sorry for what I did. Then say that, you know, when I broke into your house the other night, whatever. They write it out. They sign it. I sign it as a witness. I put the date and the time that it was written. I give it to the Commonwealth's attorney. It's entered as evidence as a written confession in the person's own handwriting. I don't type it up again and have them sign it. In their handwriting, a written confession. Is that person going to get convicted? I have never seen them not get convicted on that, on an apology letter. So, in support of Professor Duane, everything he says is right. That's what I do. Now, to take away the support, I don't try and send innocent people to jail. That's it. That's all I have. Any questions or anything like that? Sir.
I see him. Any commentaries? Eunice. Fran.
Yes. Well, I learned a long time ago.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Eunice.
Never to answer any questions and just ask for a lawyer. And I've really had to do that many a times, believe it or not.
Yeah. Best thing I can tell you, shut up.
That's right.
Best two words you'll ever hear, shut up.
Yep. You know, when my oldest boy was on the run, Glenn, two detectives come to me and they says, hey, you know, Eunice, we got a warrant out. He was involved in a murder. And I said, oh, really? And they said, yeah. I says, well, when did this take place? See, I asked questions, too. And they said, oh, last week. I said, okay, Norman, now you can leave, because he's not even in the state. And he wasn't, you know. I knew where he was. So he was locked up in another state. So I says, goodbye, Norman, you know, not even here.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, they try to pin some stuff on him, and thank God he was out of state, because he probably would have got, you know, dragged into it.
Yeah.
Because his buddy told them, who they caught, who did it said that Glenn was with him. And naturally he wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh yeah, I had to deal with that stuff back then. Thank God I don't have to deal with it anymore.
Yeah. Anybody else got anything?
Well, I was just going to bounce off you because it was funny because we were just talking about distracted driving and all that good stuff. And Flash, and I put a record on it just because I didn't want to lose it. Distracted driving, that Source National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Warning teens about distracted driving. Okay. In 2011, there were 3,331 people killed in, I guess, I'm assuming that this is in our state, because that's a low number. In
right.
2010, it was 3,267 people killed from teenager distracted driving. I have no idea what it's going to take to wake up people in their attitudes. Just because they're driving a bigger vehicle doesn't necessarily make them any better or stronger or whatever they want to be out there on the freeway.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm just, it's just, I'm finding it very annoying when even the little chickadees that are driving these big monster trucks that are thinking that, you know, the gas pedal and the brake pedal work the same, except for the stopping distance doesn't.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know what it's going to take.
You know what it is, Fran?
Something's got to change.
Because they all say to themselves, it will never happen to me. And
what?
Yeah, really. A lot of them say, yeah, my buddy got killed, but it's never going to happen to me. And that's the sad part. They don't even learn from that. And that's a true fact with these young kids. Never going to get caught. It'll never happen to me. Only because I did a lot when my kids were... The detectives in juvenile hall used to call me and say, you know, this kid's really a good kid. Can you take him, you know, to your house at night instead of us locking him up, you know? And I listened to a lot of those kids. In the group with my son, my oldest boy, there was probably about 12 of them that hung around. And out of the 12, 8 of them died one way or another.
Damn.
And their attitude was, because it will never happen to me. That was their attitude, because they're young and they're cocky, and that's the whole thing. Never going to happen to me.
I think what was a real kick for me is teaching driver's ed. I'm sorry, I don't make that kind of money where I can go buy myself a Porsche.
Right.
I had a kid pass me while I was doing driver training with a new kid that had been a student in my my class, driving a Porsche. Daddy bought this kid a Porsche. He wasn't even 17 yet, and Daddy bought him a Porsche. What happened to the days of, hey, you want a car? Good. You see the drugstore? They're looking for some kid to schlep stuff. You go schlep, you go buy your own car, And then we'll talk about it in a couple of years. What happened to those days where kids actually had to earn, and I mean earn, their merits? They don't anymore.
Well, that's because, I'm sorry,
they think, the money falls off the tree sitting in the backyard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, somebody will chop it down quick because we're running out of kids real quick.
I don't know. I got one planted right here. I'm looking at it right now, and I'm waiting for it to harvest.
Yeah? Which one? The one that your newest grandchild?
No, the money tree.
The money
Yo,
tree.
If you got one of them money trees, you better set one this way, homie.
I got an actual money tree sitting on the table. I'm waiting for it to harvest.
When I harvest. I'm not going there.
No, that's the other harvest.
Yeah, that's what I said. I'm just going to shut up now.
Well, my children, anything that they wanted, they had to pay for half of it when I was bringing them up. And guess what they did with their children? Got them whatever they wanted.
You were generous. My parents, when I turned 16, they were like, even a can of hairspray, go get a job. No. I had to, as soon as 16 came, that was it.
Well, they had jobs, but, I mean, when they were asking for chick jeans, I says, well, you come up with half of it, and I'll come up with the other half. They didn't get too many pairs of chick jeans, but, and now when they had children, whatever they wanted, they got. And so that kind of destroyed them, because now they think the world owes them owes them the world, and they don't owe them nothing.
That is so sad.
That's the way most of the kids are growing up nowadays, that same way.
Yeah.
They don't know how to hold a job. They don't know how to be respectful, and they've got the hands out, expecting everybody to kiss their ass, and it's wrong.
Well,
and the people in Denmark, Germany, Colombia, Poland, France, Australia, the United Kingdom, Russia, Canada, United States, as well as Brazil, Sweden, Ireland, France, and Poland, Russia, and Romania, the Ukraine, as well as New Zealand and Japan, they're all going through the same shit.
They want money trees too, huh?
They want money trees too, yeah. Right now, there's just as we're talking, there's 181,678 people worldwide. Listening or checked in and checked out.
I need to throw this one on the table.
But since the first of the year, the all-time history of this show and the blog and everything is 2,039,746 people.
That's because you got sexy people on the show now. That's why.
Is that what it is?
It's got to be, man.
Well, they're saying how brave this man is. Because his co-hosts and the other ones that come in after are all women. So they're saying this man is very brave being on this show with all these women. True or not?
No, I agree.
He's a smart man because now he's got all of these women to stand next to him and support him if we so desire.
Right.
It's a different way of looking at it.
All right, Fran. I was doing good, Fran, until you said that.
I know. I said beside us. I didn't say behind us. There's a difference. I want to throw this one on the table, though.
Go ahead.
Did you catch where, I forget what state it was, they are no longer going to do dodgeball because it's being bullying towards the incompetent children?
No,
well,
I didn't hear about
that. That's kind of a true statement, Fran, because, if we go back to our high school years, if you were in with the cool crowd, you took that ball and whipped it at some poor child, and I'm sure true today that stuff still happens, but on a more brutal type of level. I remember being a kid and some of them kids would literally break down when we were going to play dodgeball, wanted nothing to do with it because they were just the target of having a ball whipped at them. So, on some level, I can understand them doing away with it, but on some level, maybe the teachers and the community or whatever need to get a better grip on these kids that are, being massive bullies.
Okay, well, let me put it this way. I was babysitting, and the one kid wanted to pulverize the other. And before I allowed either one of them to happen, I said to both kids, I said, if either one of you hurts the other one severe enough, you better be prepared to have your ass beaten twice as bad as what you just did.
All right.
And surprisingly enough, all of a sudden, this hitting back and forth all of a sudden ceased because they realized I wasn't playing.
Right.
And when we, I'm a young 62.
Right.
When we did dodgeball, I mean, we played dodgeball, but everybody was fair game. And in fact, if you really wanted to, you actually got hit early in the game, so you got to go and sit down. If you were smart, then you didn't have to work too hard.
I can remember the jocks in middle school. I mean, go back to middle school. I can remember the super jocks that ran the middle school when we had gym, and them boys would pick up them balls, and they would just bombard some of them kids and whack them off the head and everything else. And you knew that it was done on purpose, that they weren't just playing for the sake of playing. It's you know, I would say 20% of all the kids that were in that gym class were a target for, you know, these,
you know,
super.
For us, it's different. It was a true, you know, you were not allowed to hit somebody above the shoulders. You were not allowed to do certain things. And everybody did adhere to it. But I'll tell you what, if someone in the class didn't, they did find out afterwards why those rules were in place.
I know a couple of kids that didn't make it past the ninth and 10th grade because they would not participate in gym because they were targets. And nothing was done. Those kids quit school. And life just went on, you know. And, I mean, you look at that now, and that's just a damn shame because the whole situation should have been corrected, but it wasn't.
Well, I'll tell you a quick story. When I was in high school, my senior year, my brother was a freshman. He was playing football. The center of the varsity team jumped on the hood of my car. At the end of the alley, when I turned right, he kind of went off to the left, broke both his arms, and the guy failed me for gym, and told my brother that if there was anything my brother could do to keep me away from the rest of the team so I didn't hurt anybody else.
But the dude jumped on your car.
Exactly.
I remember this girl in grammar school. She always wanted to pick on me. I had long pigtails, you know. And I just said, one of these days, I waited for her. We had like a wooded area between the school and the project that we lived in. So I waited for her one day as she was coming through by herself. And I whipped her ass. Whipped it. You know, and she went home crying. The second day I waited for her, she never come through the wooded area anymore.
Something must have been wrong with my upbringing.
No, you were just brought up during a better time frame, you know, where people had a little bit, you know, more like,
or a different area of the city, you know.
Yeah.
But you know something? I never once hit a girl. Now, that didn't mean to say that I didn't take the head of the football team and throw him down a flight of stairs. But I never once hit a girl.
Alright, hold on a second. Hey, Ryan, save
yeah.
me. Save me.
Tell you what, I don't know, I'm hearing this stuff and I'm hearing about how, you know, we need to put more rules in place for the kids that are getting hurt. I can understand that. I realize some kids get picked on. That's been happening from the dawn of time. There's always going to be somebody that wants to prove they're an alpha male by picking on somebody. But now those people that are getting picked on, until they realize that they can stand up for themselves and stop something that's happening to him without running to mom and dad or the faculty or the closest person. I mean, that's what's happening with society now is people are pussies. So we've got all these things that are happening, and nobody knows what to do because they've never had to stand up for themselves, and so they wait for somebody else to do it. And while this is happening, we're losing all of our damn rights, and people are standing by hoping that somebody else takes care of it. Now, when I was in school, I used to get the shit kicked out of me all the time. To the point when I was in third grade, I actually was crazy. My dad was in construction and stuff, and I don't remember the exact quote, but I told him something along the lines of my foundation isn't ready to move on. And basically, I elected to stay back in third grade because I didn't want to hang out with the people in my class that were kicking the shit out of me. Well, so I stayed back. Things got worse. One day I had enough, and I beat the shit out of three guys that were picking on me. From then on, everything was good. What do you know? I've got self-esteem, able to handle myself. I'm not afraid to go handle something on my own without calling mom and dad. Kids these days don't do that. There's no touch rules at school. You can't play football because somebody's going to get tackled. Somebody's going to get their feelings hurt. Everybody gets a trophy. No wonder America's a bunch of pussies.
I got news for you. My morning meeting at work today was because one of the guys went to a three-hour sexual harassment class, and a lot of, you know, guys grab ass and shit all the time. Well, basically, this guy told anybody, whoever does what, or all that person's got to do is just go up to the front office.
The only argument I have with you, Ryan, is this. I can understand, you know, standing up for yourself and stuff, but the problem with today's kids is they play dirty. As soon as you stand up for yourself, they're going to get you with four or five other people. They play with guns, they play with knives, and they harass your family.
That's
I agree with that. Absolutely.
They did that back in my time. They had done it through time.
They actually fired them now. Fran, back then they used them as threats. I've got 14-year-olds shooting up 15-year-olds in the city that's adjacent to the little town I live in. It's one thing to wave a pistol in the air and think you're a badass, but it's another thing at 14 to pull the trigger. And that is what
Absolutely.
Happening.
Now, in the area that I was growing up in, we had rifles in the back windows of the pickups and we went to school. They were in the back of the pickup all day long. First off, nobody stole them. Second of all, after class, if you had an argument with somebody, you went out back and settled it. You never once thought of grabbing that rifle or grabbing your gun to shoot somebody. Now, when you don't have any self-esteem and you think the world's coming down on you and you're entitled to every right that everybody else has earned, if you feel belittled and held back in any way and the only avenue you have is to grab a gun because you're a gutless pussy, because you've never had to stand up for yourself, absolutely that's the route you're going to take. But if you have had to develop a self-esteem and confidence to stand up for yourself and fight for what's right in a manner which nobody's fighting dirty, but you get your point across and you're able to move forward in a positive way, that's a heck of a lot different than these jackasses that think the only thing they can do is pull a gun because they've never had to get a job. They've had an allowance. They don't have to worry about if mom and dad are working because they're on welfare. They're not worrying about the school system because everybody gets a good grade and a trophy. They haven't had to do anything their whole life.
Hey.
So they haven't built any of that self-esteem or confidence up. So
going back
they
to
do,
saying
grab
things. Back to saying things. I had one night working and running this stuff on third shift, and I had a girl come up to me that came in and said, I'm on my period, I'm constipated, and I don't want to be fucked with. All I said was,
That was a smart girl. I'm sorry.
And all I said was, go home.
That's a smart
move.
Right. Yep.
You know, honesty goes a long ways. And, you know, people can't even do that anymore. You're so worried about hurting somebody's feelings and having a lawsuit that you can't tell little Johnny to quit being an asshole or Susan's going to punch him in the head. First of all, Susan can't punch him in the head because that's harassment. Second of all, you can't call little Johnny an asshole because then you're going to be against guys or kids or whatever the hell they can twist it into, and his parents are going to get butt hurt and sue you. So every time we make a law protecting the kids. We're making a law that's keeping the kids from developing their own persona and confidence, but it's also tying our hands on how we can actually protect our kids. So the whole no gun, no tolerance, that's bullshit. Like, I used to ride my bike with a pellet gun, drive around. I never shot anybody because my dad would have kicked my ass. You can't kick your kid's ass anymore, so kids drive around shooting people.
Well, let me tell you something. I don't care how old I am, or how old my grandchildren are, or my children, I'll kick their ass every time. If they don't have respect for me, they're not going to get it from me.
And you know what? We would have never run to school screaming child abuse. We didn't know what that was. We snorted up to the teacher. We got slapped. We had our mouth washed out with soap. And when Dad got home, he beat our ass. So you don't
know how to do that. You do that shit now, you're going to jail.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The system
for poisoning your kids, for abuse, I mean, shit, the list goes on.
And that's why kids are the way they are today, because their parents can't put a hand. When my son Glenn was 10 years old, these kids beat the shit out of him, and he came up and he called, you know, Ma. I said, oh, really? Come on, let's go. They were the neighborhood kids. We went downstairs, went up to the corner. Three of them were standing there, and I held two back, and I said to my son, kick the shit out of him. And you'll take every one of them, because I'll stand right here and make sure the others don't. You think they ever went after my son again?
Hell no.
No.
You know, and
no.
That was my dad's only concern. If I got suspended one time because I got in a fight. And, you know, the normal routine is you go home, Mom chews my ass. My dad worked two jobs, so he didn't get home till 6. But Mom would chew my ass, and I'd have to go upstairs and wait in the room for Dad, which was the longest 4 hours of my life. Sitting on the bed waiting for to get your ass kicked. So he'd come in and, you know, what happened? Well, I got suspended today. Well, why? Well, I got in a fight. His first question, did they throw the first punch? Yes, they did. Well, don't do it again. Now, if I started a fight, I'd get my ass kicked for starting shit. But if I'm defending myself, why would you punish someone for defending themselves? So, but I got my ass kicked.
You got it easy. My mom's youngest sister was 2 years older than me, and they gave her the notes to take home so I'd get my ass beat.
Because they knew you weren't going to take it home, so.
Of course, would you?
No.
Right. Well, you know what? We always did, because it was, we respected our parents. It doesn't matter. If we got in trouble, you stand up to it. You know, yeah, I fucked up. You know, here's the proof. You know, what's my punishment this time? But anymore, it's blame your neighbor, blame society, blame whoever the hell you have to get your point across. So that you're not held accountable. And the shitty thing is, we're doing it to our own society.
When you say hold accountable, I mean, you were saying, you know, go home, and you would bring the home note to your dad or mom, whatever. I was already out of the house by the time I was 13.
Mm-hmm.
I was already supporting myself at that age. So when someone says, well, they had a rough life, or they had a bad, poor family, I'm sorry, either you learn from the very beginning, and not necessarily from your parents, because I obviously didn't learn it from my parents, the difference between right and wrong.
Right.
And you learn to stand up for what was right, whether it was for yourself or for someone else who was less, I don't want to say intolerable, but less...
less fortunate?
Yes, thank you. Unfortunate. Mm-hmm. And senior, whatever you want, whatever label you want to put on.
Right.
But you always defended somebody that was not able to defend themselves at that time for whatever reason.
Exactly. But anymore, I mean, going back to you being 13 when you moved out, that was in a time when you could. You know, absolutely. And now you can't do that. It's neglecting your kid. You got to get emancipated, and you can't do that until you're 16 or 18. But I remember going with my mom down to the state house to get a work permit so that I could get my first job at 14. Because in Colorado, you're not allowed to have a job, a full-time job, until you're 16 years old. But I wanted to buy a car, and my family didn't buy me a Porsche or any other kind of shit. You want a car? Earn it. Go get a job, bust your ass, to buy whatever car you can afford. So they were there to help me financially, emotionally, anything else I ever needed. That was never a question. But you learn how to take care of yourself, so that when you get out in the real world, you're not living off society. and expecting everything to be handed to you. So I don't know. Somewhere in the last 30 years, things have gotten fucked up, and I don't know if we're ever going to be able to pull the country out of it.
No.
Well, I had five foster kids. Each one of those kids had to cook dinner. Each one of those kids had to, I taught them, and they all learned how to do their own laundry. And people said I was too hard on them, and I was like, "Why? What made you think that was being hard on these kids?" My youngest was 11, my oldest was 18. And what part of that was hard? If
right.
it was my own child, they would have had to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
well, We had a job wheel growing up that was pinned to the wall in the kitchen. There were five kids in my family. My dad had it divided up for each of our names, and then all of the household chores were in five categories. And every week he would turn that dial one notch. And this week I might have kitchen and trash. Next week I got bathrooms, and next week's vacuuming and dusting. That's what you do all week. It's just what happens. On weekends, everybody did their own laundry. But you know what? When I got my own place, it was clean. I knew how to do all of that shit. I didn't have to call somebody to come do my laundry or go drop it off somewhere. You know, you develop that growing up. But when all you have to do is worry about when your mom's going to get you your shoes or your next video game growing up, you know, nobody does anything on their own.
I appreciate that. Because you know what? When I was teaching driver's ed, I actually gave parents contracts and said, you know what? Checkbook ends now. And I actually had parents say, well, you know what? My child doesn't have to do anything until they're 21 and move out of the house. And once they're 21, they are out of the house. And I was like, so you're not going to teach them any skills now, but you're going to kick them out of the house at 21 so they can fail.
Right, throw them to the wolves.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we really taught our kids a lot, didn't we? I mean, something's wrong when these parents, oh, is that time out? Excuse me? Time
right.
out for what? You know, no, this is not time out. Listen to me, youngin. You have a mouth? You better learn to shut it. Or I will shut it for you. Oh, that's celibate. Well, you know what? I remember having the choice of either ivory soap or that nasty yellow soap. You know what the difference is between those two soaps?
Nothing.
Oh, yes, there is. Oh, no. Yes, there is. Ivory, and this is, you obviously can tell I've had this a little while. Ivory soap sticks between the teeth all day. That nasty yellow soap, it's a flash in the pan, you did your deed, and it's done. You rinse your mouth, it's gone. So you have to ask yourself, do you want it to last all day and really bother you, or do you want to just take the nasty stuff, be done with it? It's like being sent out to go get your own switch.
Right. You know, my dad used to sit there while he was yelling at us for whatever we did with his pocket knife. And he would scrape off slivers of soap and hand them to us, and we'd have to sit there and chew it. He always used lava. And you would be foaming at the mouth, dripping that shit on the floor, trying not to throw up. That was the most god-awful thing. And obviously, if you hear me talk now, you realize it worked because I never fucking cuss. But, you know, at the time, being that age, I shouldn't have. You know, you don't need to talk like that when you're in grade school. But, yeah, same thing. We chewed on soap and knew not to do it again.
Well, I don't know about that part, not doing it again.
Well,
not to get caught
anyway.
Right.
You learn it's got a time and a place. You know, you respect the people around you. If you're with your group that talks that way, that's one situation. But if you're around other demographics, you tone it back. You know, it's a courtesy thing and it's a respect thing.
Well,
it's finding it harder and harder to respect things.
We're at the end of it.
Yeah.
We rolled
good night,
over a little
Phil.
Bit. No worries. See you guys Thursday. Bill will be here Thursday. And then
we'll see
you. I'm gonna let Mike P with take us out with I in the darkness.
That works. Good night, guys.
All right, good night,
good
everybody.
Good night.
I am